Well, it's strange to be exactly where you imagined you'd be, with John Swinney elected as First Minister today at Holyrood, despite the fact that none of this was even at the cards this time last week. We look at his speeches so far, the contributions from the opposition during that Holyrood debate, some of the unusual moments, a real prioritisation from about independence from the Greens, for example, some very kind words about Hamza Yousaf from Alex Cole Hamilton. But we look at what is going to lie behind John Swinney and Kate Forbes' joint offer. Does a growth economy and an emphasis on that mean the growth of small Scottish businesses, or just more inward investment and control of our assets in Scotland? Those are the headlines. Now for the podcast.
Hi, Choms, and welcome to this week's one and only Leslie Riddick podcast.
Oh, you are tempting fate, Pat Joyce.
Oh, God. You mean, don't Rishi Sunak, don't you dare call in the general election. I'll be down there. I can where you live, pal. Abdi can's where you live, number 10. I'll be down there to have strong words with you, Rishi. And you're about my height and weight. So, you know, this could be an even contest. Yeah, so... As what we've done today, to be perfectly honest, and we're going slightly later than normal, is because it is a big day, even though it may seem a bit of a performative, in that Hamza Yousaf did officially resign as First Minister just before noon today. Then made a speech in Holyrood around about, I think it was about 2:30, and then we had the, is it a selection or election of the First Minister, the new First Minister, and that's where we're going to begin today. So your first impressions of the, can we start with Hamza Yousaf's resignation speech, Leslie?
Well, I actually missed that because I was in the middle of a Zoom about local government. So you can pick that one up.
Right, I will indeed. Damn and blast, I'm going to have to think. No, I was genuinely impressed. It was Hamza in his deuce mood. You know, he was very thoughtful, thanked his family, of course. And again, this is a theme that's going to come throughout from the vast majority of contributions that were made today. And he focused entirely on kindness, consideration. And he spoke about his making his first speech way back, I think 2011, when after it, Tavish Scott came up to him and thanked him and was very kind. So that was the whole theme of the Yousaf speech, was about reaching out across the political divide, being considerate, being respectful, and kindness. And a point we're going to come on to later on in the podcast is he finished very, very strongly. And I must say, he did actually thank people for the support that he'd received across the political boundaries. And I did notice throughout his speech, he kept looking over towards Labour, Liberal Democrat side. That was his glance. I mean, I may be making more of this than there is to it, but his glance when he actually said thank you about personal support, it did go over towards the Liberal Democrats and to the Labour side of the opposition benches. But he did finish very, very strongly. He talked about the support particularly received when his in-laws were being held and couldn't get out of Gaza. And he spoke very, very strongly about the situation, the unfolding situation in Gaza, and said that he would continue to speak out not only for justice at home, but justice abroad. And again, what had been happening with the recent situation in Gaza with the Israeli Defence Forces and the rejection of the Egyptian-Qatari deal that had been reached with Hamas. So, yes, I was very impressed with it, and very quiet, very dignified. And I said, what is the phrase? I'm going to mangle this, probably. Nothing so became him as to the manner of his going.
Yeah, I think we may have used that one before, actually, because he has had some pretty good... Although, I see John Curtis thought that the speech that I thought was so moving, I had a wee greet, was actually rubbish. But there you go. Well, you can always disagree with the guru.
Yes.
And actually, just in case anyone's wondering, John Swinney won, by the way.
Yes.
We could... kind of missed the top line there. Except, I mean, that was probably pretty predictable. But we did go through this thing that every party leader nominated themselves for election, which is... I mean, I was just saying to Pat before we started this, it's pretty excruciating stuff. But we've listened so that you don't have to, basically.
Yeah.
And interestingly, actually, Alex Cole Hamilton in the end, because they make their pitches 5 minutes only. They make their pitch to be first minister. It is utterly predictable. I mean, you know where they're all coming from. Although actually hearing them all boom, 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 one after the other, you do notice a couple of things. Like, I mean, the Tories only talk about independence.
Yeah.
That's just all they talk about. It's quite extraordinary. Douglas Ross had started off and he said he'd quoted John Swinney. He didn't make it clear who he was quoting, and then sort of came in with a flourish and said, ha ha, that was John Swinney 21 years ago. Like you were waiting for a big laugh. God, 21 years ago, look how old he is. But it just didn't happen. It just sat there. Yeah, you said that. And what? Then he went on to a long thing about, you know, the need to focus on the national interest. Honestly, almost anyone listening to this can just start to get pins and start poking them in their eyes at this point. It's all the stuff you normally hear. But it's just so noticeable that, you know, he goes on, you know, independence is their only priority. Well, we'll come on to this. But, you know, John Swinney has already had pelters, actually, for in his speech, you know, yesterday, actually making his priorities all the deliverance, the delivery of public services business. And they're actually not mentioning independence right up front. But hey, there's something to learn from this. You know, as my mother used to say, hung for a sheep is a lamb. You know, if you've got independence as a wee badge in your inside pocket, you didn't show it to anybody, napsy, you're obsessing about independence. So you might as well make a fist of it. But he kind of, he was going on and on about this, you know, this obsession. And he said, we represent the people's priorities. And I thought, gosh, maybe he's actually going to just spell out what they are. No, you know. So you just left none the wiser. Everybody piously incanting this sort of, you know, stuff, schools, health service. And I'm not saying these things aren't important, but just that just doesn't get you any further, you guys. And I mean, anyone listening to this is still going, Tories, cuts, austerity, always objecting to money, objected to the Scottish Parliament in the first place. Oh, please, you know. So anyway, that was old Douglas. Anna Sarwar, his theme, he hardly mentioned independence, actually. And it's interesting because obviously we're going to be into an election mode here. His thing is entirely about no institution is stronger in Scotland after 17 years of SNP rule. And this, you know, that comes a little closer to the bone in that there are actual subject areas here. NHS waiting lists, worse, homelessness, you know, in fact, this could be a Kate Forbes list, drug deaths, 10% higher this year, horribly, the attainment gap aspects of it still worse. Now, you could quibble about every bit of that, you know, because when John Swinney came back on, it's also true we have the best functioning core A&Es in the UK. You know, homelessness, you can go through each one of these things. And absolutely, the, you know, cutting in the money to affordable housing will not sit well in a lot of this. But again, where does the money come from for an enhanced budget to kind of deal with all these things from a party that's currently cutting all its commitments to any sort of, you know, greater welfare state? So you're kind of hearing that going, you know, in your background. Alex Cole Hamilton, who popped up first, maybe this is always the fate of the Lib Dems, to be the ones who bob up. Perhaps it's just the alphabetical nature, you know, it's alphabetical order, I think. It
yes.
is, obviously, yeah. So so they're just doomed to be the ones that have to pop up first, looking bright-eyed, bushy-tailed, with no hope at all of kind of winning. And their line, well, that there's a Liberal revival. And interesting that Alex Cole Hamilton referred repeatedly to the Liberals, not the Lib Dems. So it's almost like we're going back to the future completely. And indeed he was, because he went back to 25 years ago and said basically it was all hunky-dory back there in the days of big old, you know, Liberal kind of Lib Dem involvement in government. And you see, if you start to listen then to, he starts to get down to a few details. They're crowing about the English elections, where apparently overall they outdid the Tories. That almost had me scampering for the statistics just to check that. But, you know, I'll give them that. What does that mean for us? Not a lot. But he'd got, you know, he said, for example, mental health crisis, their solution would be to tax the social media giants. In Scotland or at UK level? And how does the money from a UK level social media tax actually find its way to mental health services, which are completely devolved in Scotland? I mean, there's just quite a number. National insulation, he wants.
That was how actually John Swinney lost his last budget back in 2009 because the Greens voted against finally. You know, so I think they've kind of had that in their porch for quite a wee while there. Power to local people. OK, everyone mutters that. There's quite a few of us coming up with something I'll be able to tell you about more about soon to try and make sure that becomes a reality, not just a kind of platitude. And fixing our broken relationship with Europe. Now, at this point, I nearly had to switch because, I mean, what the, you know. Anyway, so that was all these guys. Although I'll quite give you that then, you know, John Swinney said his thing. And then everybody had a response to the fact that he'd been made, he'd voted actually in and he was now first minister. And he said, oh, my God, here it all goes again.
Yeah.
But so they did manage to kind of, you know, slightly vary the theme. Interestingly, Alex Cole Hamilton took the time to make a really fulsome tribute to Hamza Yousaf.
Absolutely.
And I mean, I think that really was, and he, you know, talked about his family. And I think that probably was, as you suggest, the direction that he'd been looking to for the sort of personal support line. And John Swinney did as well. You know, he talked about the unfailing courtesy of Hamza. And in his speech the previous day, he talked about his grace and courage as a politician. So, you know, that's where we are. Sorry, I've been talking too much. But Swinney was also, you know, trying to still do his thing of kind of, you know, we're not going to be combative in politics anymore, and was paying tribute to all the parties over the last 25 years in a way that might make some people bite the carpet. I mean, even Annabel Goldie got a big up for something.
Yes,
I think I was snorting so badly I didn't catch quite what it was.
Yeah.
But, yeah. You know, he's you know, he didn't duck the fact the Inverness anniversary is coming up this year as well. But, you know, he was kind of pointing out Brexit, austerity, wage, lack of wage growth, productivity stale. Look at the small countries. Was almost waiting for, you know, him to mention Denmark, but that wouldn't really happen. And just, you know, he made the point independence gives us access back to the EU. Basically, we can decide what we want to do with our cash. So he did actually bother to mention, you know, He did actually mention that in his speech. So, you know, that was actually what happened. You want to do the Lorna Slater bit? Did you hear
Yeah, Lorna Slater was the only one, or did I miss it, who didn't pay tribute to talk about John Swinney's family and the sacrifices that were going to have to be made, you know, in order to want to become First Minister, which I thought, I apologise, but I don't think I had that.
You're right.
And I thought, yeah, and just to echo, I find Alex Cole Hamilton a particularly annoying, personality, but I was taken aback by how expressive he was about in his tribute to Hamza Yousaf and talked about him in the first time he met. And I thought, no, you know, you've just actually gone up in my estimation, Alex. But the other thing I noted about that, and is referring back to the Lib Dem Labour coalition in the early days of the Scottish Parliament, I wonder if that was actually, remember us, Anas? See, after the last Scottish election, we'd still be up for it. The thing that I noticed about Doug, before I got on to Lorna Slater, is that it is about the Greens, that Douglas Ross's absolute attack on the Green Party, absolute laceration in after his thanks very much to John Swinney for his service and talking about his family, lacerated the Greens, focused in on them. So those were two key areas of attack, which were independence, yet don't be a nationalist First Minister, being a First Minister for the nation, and that attack on the Greens. But Lorna Slater emphasised, and she went through what she regarded as progressive measures in terms of the child poverty, about all the potential bills that were sitting there, and said that they abstained because they didn't know what the government platform was going to be under John Swinney. And I noted that they left everything to the end before they talked about conversion therapy. And that was way down the list. So I just wonder if I'm sensing a slight shift again towards these economic issues, which affect everybody, you know?
Yeah, but the thing I thought was really noticeable is that she said, you know, what the Greens are for is the climate crisis, a fair and equal society, and independence.
Yes.
What a surprise. So she actually did that twice. Obviously, I think the Greens realising that over the events, I can't even remember whether what podcast we did about what happened in the interim. But quite obviously, you know, the whole Burach with the Greens has left people very focused on Lorna Slater's remarks, which annoys a hell out of them and Patrick Harvey. said it was taken out of context. If there was a Labour, you know, with the largest party, they'd have to deal with them. He said, obviously, but that doesn't mean to say independence doesn't matter to them. Mm. So, you know, that, you know, no red lines about independence that Lorna Slater said, that still sits and rankles with people. And the Greens will be worried that, especially if you're now to bring in the sort of, you know, UK element, this has perhaps got too many plates spinning in a conversation, Pat, but let's have a wee chat.
Yeah.
You know, with the possibility of a hung parliament, depending on which thing that you project out of the local elections in England. If that's true, then, you know, Scotland sort of comes into play in a way that it has very rarely done since 1918. I think there's been four occasions where it made a difference. The suggestion by some pollsters is that it might now do that, in that, you know, the sort of the swing for Labour was not as seismic as you might expect. Although if you extrapolated from the Blackpool South by-election, it is that big and we don't need Scotland. But the point is that if you're not sure about that and you're a independence voter, and in the past you've tried to maximise your vote by splitting it across SNP, Green or whoever, Alba, you might be thinking twice about that now, because the SNP might well be picking up list seats, which they didn't before because they won everything first past the post.
Yeah.
So it's a long way around saying that the Greens need to reposition themselves with the independents supporting public to say, look, you know, we're still here and independence matters enough for us to be mentioning it right up top. You know, that this is our platform, basically. It's one of the big three. Now, it was never one of the big three, I think, in most speeches to date. So that seemed to me to be the most obvious change that has been over the last few weeks. And, I mean, she was talking about the stuff that's the legislation that's sitting kind of semi-ready to go. There's one about a new national park. There's one about a nature bill. I know from having spoken to so many people in local areas, you know, the problem with all of these things, it's the same with the HPMAs, is that the fear that local people have is they're not anti-environmental, they're anti-centralised control. And if you've got, you know, the record of the national parks, there's some excellent commentators on on the current national parks, which also have planning powers. Nick Kemp, for example, in Parks Watch, very good lot to follow on social media. And they have not been covered in glory, you know, the existing national parks. Now, you know, folk word gets around and a lot of people just don't want to be micromanaged by the great and the good of who gets drafted onto a national park planning board. So fine, a national park, aye, you know, why wouldn't you? But on the other hand, everything, this is why we're not dealing with this problem of top-downness and kind of centralised control, screws up your delivery of so many other things, because you start off on the back foot because people think you're just basically from the centre imposing your will, which just doesn't work. So anyway, that all sprang to mind for me listening to Lorna. And she warned, you know, John Swinney against retreating to the middle ground and relying on the Tories, and then repeated that, you know, their door was open to be progressive and independent supporting. So,
yeah,
la-di-da.
Yeah, because the votes actually went, I mean, just in case anybody, and I don't blame you if you can't be bothered to look up, Alex Cole-Hamilton got 4 votes, Anna Sarra got 22, Douglas Ross got 31, John Swinney got 64, and there were 7 abstentions. And thank your lucky stars, you didn't have to sit through the whole let's all check and make sure how you do all this instructions that we sat through there. So he got a majority, John Swinney, first time round. So that was I was sitting waiting there. I'd got columns rigged up for round 1, 2, 3, 4. And thank God it just went to round 1. But the whole point about centralisation does take us back kind of a step, though, Leslie, doesn't it, to the way that John Swinney became the sole candidate, because when Kate Forbes decided she wasn't going to run, and both you and I read Robin McAlpin's blog, and just so you don't have to as well, again, I'm going to say this, folks, I watched the Robin McAlpin interview with Alex Salmond, where Robin was quite explicit about his support for Kate Forbes, because he said he'd been working closely with her team and in contact with her team, and he was supporting, even though there were differences between the two of them on economic policy and social issues, he felt that She was someone who was prepared to listen to local communities and had decentralising tendencies because she came from the Highlands, and also decentralising tendencies within the structure and organisation of the Scottish National Party.
Yeah, but I mean, let's just step back one, because, I mean, you know, Robin's views are an interesting, we'll get there. But I mean, sorry, everybody, this must be yuck listening to me with this scratchy old voice. I'm hoping that, you know, this doesn't turn into being the 100 day cough. It's been the 34 day cough so far. So let's see what happens. I think the thing is, you know, a lot of people feel very disappointed. I mean, there's a range of disappointed to even betrayed by Kate deciding not to stand. Now, I'm not criticising her because, actually, as Robin said in his column and elsewhere, once John had basically decided to stand and had then praised her to the high heavens, actually, in his first speech on that, and had actually been a bit friskier than everyone expected. I'll quite grant you, barnstorming is probably was probably a bit over the top. But still, when that was basically in there and then you looked at the lineup, it was pretty much everybody in the Scottish Parliament. The problem for Kate has always been, and it was true with the Humza election, that she didn't have the backing of other cabinet members and MSPs. Now, you can speculate on why. If she was indeed going to be the change candidate, then a lot of them could have been for the chop. Could have been. You know, well, actually, in many ways, we'll never know. And this is the kind of X ingredient then, because, you know, Robin might be quite confident about what he hoped would be Kate's platform. She's still in there, you know.
Yeah.
She's going to be in there in some sort of, you know, big position. It might be finance secretary. You've got to wonder, though, having been a finance secretary himself, John Swinney, and I've been on, I can't tell you how many blooming things, but was on BBC News Channel yesterday, not with Alex Salmond. Alex was being interviewed sort of separately. And Alex had actually said that paid that tribute to John Swinney and said he'd been an excellent finance secretary. Now, he went on to say quite a lot of less flattering things about John Swinney, and has actually picked up that in his opening salvo at that event in Glasgow University, when he was asked, what are your priorities, Alex Salmond said his response should have been independence. So he had focused in on that aspect of things. But just coming back a little bit, if John Swinney's forte, even in the eyes of Alex Salmond, who is, you know, let's face it, not a supporter, was a good finance secretary, I wonder how easy it'll be for him to have a fairly feisty other finance secretary in tow with different ideas. So and they're bound to be different, because if they're not, then everyone has been wrong about Kate being in any way a different kind of candidate. So there's an awful lot of imponderables. And in a funny kind of way, it's like, will the real Kate Forbes stand up? Because she will have the chance now to say something. And there's quite a lot of, you know, there's quite a spectrum of things that smart people think she feels, which she hasn't actually nailed her colours to the mast too much about. So there's one thing. And that would be true as well of, obviously, John Swinney. I had a wee text exchange with Graham McCormack. People listening to this will remember that we did a wee kind of hustings thing with him and Mike Russell last year, when Graham, who is the solicitor from Dumbarton, had challenged Mike for the national secretary position, I think, wasn't it? Or is it president?
President, yeah.
And so Graham kind of for a while decided to have a bit of a tilt himself at the leadership and stand against John Swinney. I mean, I must say there was immediate pelters from kind of a lot of directions, and a lot of, I thought, pretty derogatory, derisory stuff, just on the basis of, you know, Graham not being a groomed, besuited and, you know, booted looking kind of politician. But what Graham was saying to everyone who nominated him, and he is saying he actually had the nominations in the bag, he then had a conversation with John Swinney, and he wanted to talk about some kind of independence commission or some way of forwarding independence. He wanted to talk about a council tax replacement. I mean, his favour, as we know, is the annual ground rent. I did say to him, did you talk more generally about a land tax, just in case the specifics of that one pull it down? He said, yeah. And he found that Swinney was promised to explore new thinking and to consider what he was hearing. He's also very keen on dissolving the union and using international treaties, but that was defeated actually at the last conference. You know, he had a square go at that one and the whole conference knocked that one back. So, you know, there's a lot of expectations. And in that respect, John Swinney has a lot of mouths to feed, you know, because he's got to manage all these different delivery objectives about just generally speaking, pulling up the, you know, standards of delivery in every public service. He's got everybody who wants to know about independence. And I did actually tweet yesterday because I noticed that when I was watching the conference, there wasn't a question from the Nationals, surprisingly enough, in the midst of it all. And I noticed afterwards that the young editor of the National, who you know because she was one of your pupils, Laura Webster, had tweeted to say that actually they were disappointed that they hadn't been asked forward to ask a question, which is like, what? As a result of that tweet, actually, John Swinney did have a little bit of time with one of their reporters after the press conference, when naturally that reporter was asking a lot of questions about independence policy. I mean, all the stuff that, hello, independence supporters would want to know, like, what are we doing about the, you know, what was passed by conference last year? Is that still the strategy? I mean, in that interview, which is on the National website today, Swinney is saying, well, yeah, you know, conference passed it. So, and as indeed it did, you know, so that you actually would not really be able to deviate from that one. So, you know, so that's something. I guess people are still waiting to see how you manage to square this all off, how you manage to talk about independence and at the same time essentially go a bit kumbaya, which seemed to be, you know, a lot of what Swinney was talking about yesterday about, you know, listening and being less, I can't remember quite the phrasing, but less obtuse and obstructionist or whatever. It wasn't, it started with O, but it wasn't either of them.
Yes. Oh, dear. Yeah, because what I noticed from the speeches when they were laying out the three party leaders who actually stood and compared it and contrasted it, and I know that John Swinney was a shoo-in. He was going to win either on first or second round. But I actually noticed the difference in tone that he took, which was calm and collected. And I just wonder how well the attack dog nature is going to be. Before we get into the substantive elements, if you even look at the presentation of Anas Sarwar, Alex Cole-Hamilton, genuinely, you can forget about accepting a couple of constituencies up here, and Douglas Ross. How well will that go down with people? Will John Swinney be able to change that tone and make them seem out of step with what they're demanding, which is, you know, competence? I just wondered about their tone, and will that go down well with the electorate? Didn't go down well with me, that's all I've got to say. I just thought they sounded angry and snide.
There's definitely that danger. I mean, I'd written down on Swinney's thing today, grown up, which it did sound like after everyone had their wee stampy footy stuff. Basically, he'd come in and just was kind of grown up enough to say, hey, it's 25 years of devolution, you know, and just it was quite a clever move, actually, to just come off himself, but just to sort of reflect like a statesperson would on the bigger side of things into which he slotted, you know. So that I think was a pretty clever move and it certainly made him seem a bit more grown up. I have to say in the press conference, whatever it was yesterday, there's been so many, it's like a blur now, but the Glasgow one anyway. Yeah. I did think it was, if I heard somebody else coming in, you know, sort of backslapping and saying this is going to be brilliant. I mean, this is just the thrown bit in you that comes up, isn't it? When you see everybody beginning to say how marvellous somebody's going to be, you starts to give you the book, you know, to be really honest. You know
what I mean? But the natural cynicism kicks in. Just a
wee bit. You can see why some people are never going to be party animals, you know. But there was just a little touch of it seemed a little bit like this is kind of lackluster. It's going to be difficult to see, you know, when he's talking about just doggedly sitting and trying to get everything. Now, that is behind the scenes. That is probably I don't know, but it probably is what lifts quite a lot of performances. Just it usually is, isn't it, in most projects or businesses or anything. And yet there are some really core decisions in there. I mean, coming back to many of the criticisms, for example, that Robin's made over time, Robin McAlpine, about the about the involvement of consultancies like KPMG in the making of policy and framing of ideas. The more you hear, you know, that the kind of combination of John Swinney and Kate Forbes talking about, you know, economic growth, you know, okay, fine, except that what does that really mean? You know, if that just keeps meaning that we're going to try to kind of get volume house builders to kind of build what they haven't been capable of building at affordable rates before, if we're not going to tackle any of the land issues that mean a lot of them are actually making most of their money from land banking, you know, if we just hand over big sectors to if you look at our energy, for example, I mean, that is a pretty parlous state of affairs where you look at the amount of assets in Scotland that are already owned by international capitalism. And again, you don't need to be, you know, socialist worker to look at that and think, if we became independent, there's hardly any of our energy assets that are owned by local, you know, medium-sized businesses. And where is the confident investment in them? You know, let's pull, if you're going to talk about economic growth, let's not be making it in an inward investment. I mean, there's a very interesting article that's actually by Ian McConnell, who's the Herald's business editor, who's obviously a bit of a, well, I don't know what his politics are, but he's definitely not as kind of unionist as you would expect. And he was actually looking at this kind of relationship, the SNP and its problem with Scottish business, and saying that it's really kind of odd in many ways, because they certainly have got a perception problem. There was a poll done, Institute of Directors or whatever, asked if the Scottish government was doing a better or worse job on business than the UK government. 68% of their members said worse. Now, this is extraordinary because 78% of them think Brexit has been a disaster. Who did Brexit? It was not us. No. So if you're getting to the point of you've got some people who are absolute Brexit skeptics, but they, for some reason, and we had, you know, courtesy of the British government, we've had the lettuce, the destruction of the mortgage, you know, people's mortgage and purchasing power. You know, we've had all the kind of instability that's come from south of the border. And what? You know, 68% of directors of companies think the Westminster government's doing a better job on business. I mean, when he drills down a bit, some of this seems to be because, you know, there's basically higher taxes on higher earners here, which I noticed that John Swinney, in one of his many responses, made the point that if there hadn't been higher taxes in Scotland, there would be £1 billion worth less of cash to put into stuff like the Scottish child payment or whatever. I mean, you can have arguments about whether or not at a certain margin people begin to not pay it and start fiddling around. But I mean, for crying in a bucket, you'd never do anything if you started to, you know, think about that too much. The point still is there. Is that what this is all about? 78% of those institute director folks said that it's not right to be getting, you know, to use the tax powers in Scotland. But, you know, that's still, you know, Ian McConnell's still reflecting that he doesn't think that's really the core problem either. And actually that Scotland has avoided technical recession last year, unlike the rest of the UK. Then now he comes to this point about inward investment. Is Scotland's been doing much better altogether than the rest of the UK? But if you're to now get into the nitty gritties of the discussion that we need to be having, Is that strategically what we want? At any cost that we keep, basically, of course you would have inward investment, of course you would, because we have fantastic resources here that are being invested in by companies that are now taking over control of our renewables and much of our infrastructure, Edinburgh Airport, you know, all sorts of assets. Now, what about growing our own? Because when I think about all the examples in that film about Denmark, having almost sort of finished going round with it, the Danes have almost got a problem at the moment because of the size of Novo Nordisk, which is the biggest company they have, whose, I think, whose turnover is now greater than the entire economic output of Denmark. This is a company that runs diabetes pills and is now developing an obesity pill. Now, I'm not getting into, you know, you could have a long conversation about big pharma and all the rest of it, but that's a homegrown Danish company, just as Maersk is, just as Lego is, you know. Where are ours? And that's that point. This is what we need to be discussing, because, you know, I'm sure a lot of independent supporters are not really wanting to just see more of this handing over our kit. And if we aren't using our sort of Scottish National Investment Bank properly, even though the guy who's in charge of it gets a fair few bob, according to the Scotsman, who've got a list of all the Quango, you know, kids today, we need, this is where we need to see the improvement, you know, as well, not just just at the, you know, the levels that Douglas Ross and Anna Sarwar will be kind of taking pot shots at. We need to actually get better investment in what's going on in Scotland. So loads of demand and expectation and different kind of mutually, you know, difficult to fulfill obstacles ahead for John Swinney. I mean, for example, I think we've said this before, there's the housing budget, there's the active yeah. travel budget. They're the same. What's she going to axe? This looks pretty obvious. Is that okay? You know?
Yeah. I mean, at all within the while, we know we're operating with the fact of genuinely shrinking budget allocations from the centre. And that doesn't look likely to change. I mean, I keep hearing this narrative of change from the Labour Party, and I keep wondering what the change is actually going to be. And back to this whole thing you're talking about economics, Leslie, I find this a barren discussion, because what currently we're getting the narrative from the Labour Party and the Conservative Party and their pitches in order for the general election is absolutely no detail whatsoever about the way to solve the endemic problems of the UK economy that have been here for decades, about lack of investment, lack of research and development, the inability to take advantage of all the innovations. I mean, and let's look at Scotland, all these incredible technological innovations in green areas that are immediately taken up and developed elsewhere. And that's getting back to, as you said, the absolute plethora of resources that we have here that are just sitting there ready and should be utilised for the benefit of the people of Scotland. And to raise people up. And that's what they ought to be used for, not for actually feathering the nests of people who are actually just giving it out to the shareholders. And we all know what happens if they don't do terribly well, that we bail them out anyway. One thing I was going to say, I don't know if you noticed in the, and again, it's electoral, because I said to you before we came on, there's one thing that I actually despise is internal party politics. I really can't get my head around machinations and Machiavellian techniques for getting elected and becoming leaders. I really despise it. It just turns me off completely. And as you said, it scunners me. I just cannot abide it. But when I listened to to Alex Salmond, I was quite disappointed in this, but it is party politics. He said to Robin McAlpin, he talked about the SNP's much anticipated drubbing in the general election. And I thought, that is a very odd way to describe this. And I know he leads another political party now, but I just thought, that's lacking in generosity and suggests a meanness of spirit and a revengeful nature that I was quite taken aback by. And to be honest about it, I thought he was smarter than that. But I don't know many people actually watch his YouTube channel with Tasmina Ahmed Sheikh. If the presentation style is anything, here's me getting nasty, presentation style is anything like the bit that I saw at the beginning, I'm surprised that anybody watches it, because it was absolutely appalling in terms of... Yeah, hello, here we are, hello.
No, don't take the piss too hard.
Do it. No.
Yeah. But quite, it was pretty wooden, so we say, you know, and it was a bit sort of yesteryearish, you know, really,
yeah.
I think this is the difficulty generally, because it looks then as if your style is kind of, it doesn't feel contemporary. So it feels like that just in one moment explains why you're not on anything, mm-hmm. you know. Now, of course, there's many reasons why you're not on anything. You're an independent supporting party, and that's the bulk of it. And actually, Alex has been on quite a lot
yes,
of outlets over the last couple of days. So, you know, it's not, you know, cometh the Rammy and everybody on the SNP, you know, behaving with extreme unity, such that you can't winkle out Kate to sort of say, you know, even to have her criticisms. Mm-hmm. You're going to end up going somewhere else to try to get some critical words. But I did think that this ALBA have really got to try and make this their mind up on this. I mean, on the BBC News interview I was in with Alex, he was basically saying repeatedly that what John Swinney would be wise to do would be to go and have a, you know, word with Ash Regan and, you know, get list her support. And I mean, obviously, the guys in London knew hee-haw about the details of what had happened the day before in the vote of no confidence, which they might also think is, you know, of little significance. And who knows? There's been so many votes over the last few days. Will people remember them? I think so, actually, because it's extraordinary how people, I mean, I don't know how many people have said to me, it's a bit like everybody still remembering that the SNP, you know, brought down Jim Callaghan's government and ushered in the Thatcher years.
Allegedly.
I was about to say that. Thank you for the chorus. So, you know, that narrative, however, has stuck for, God, how many years is that now? You know, 30-something years.
45.
Well calculated, my friend. So, you know, these moments of like the wee jab, the wee dagger going in, people do remember that, actually. And it might be fortunate for Alba that there was so much going on that maybe people didn't quite notice. But I think the idea of voting against a Scottish, you know, an independent supporting party with unionist opposition would just not look too good. And I think, as we said before, although it wasn't, you know, in chronological terms, it came after Hamza deciding not to take up the Ash Reagan option. In hindsight, it begins to look like the justification for it.
Yes. And
that's the day. That's, you know, life ain't fair, but Alex will know clearly enough that you just have to avoid these perceptions of just malicious intent and sort of, you know, sort of big elbows kind of getting, you know, different people out of the way. So I don't think that that was a totally successful move. So I'd imagine actually that there's probably a bit of a push with the Greens having slightly wobbled, and you can see that from the priority that Lorna gave to independence in her speech. They know it. Alba having definitely wobbled by voting with unionist parties against the SNP. Kate coming on board with John. I mean, that's pretty big, really, in terms of closing down the debate for now, you know, because, I mean, they're not, it's not all over bar the shouting. There has to be some really pretty worked out positions to keep that cabinet kind of, you know, consensus together. And then you've still got the point that, you know, as I think Robin and others have basically said, where's the renewal? I mean, Kate was the only renewal candidate, you know, that looked likely to stand. So that this is now a sort of retreading of people who have, despite Douglas Ross's attempt at, you know, making capital out of it. It's true. We're still sitting with the same politicians that have been in charge across the Nicola time in office, across the whole nine yards. If people feel there has to be some kind of renewal of the party to just be more bouncy, for one thing, and more on it with independence, then that's going to leave people feeling a bit flat. So I'd have thought it would be wise, and, you know, he's not a stupid man, John, not at all.
He
knows, and he mentioned that, you know, of the many kind of quarters he needs to satisfy are the people who voted for independence in 2021. So, you know, he's well aware, and he was saying it, you know, we're not going to apologise, because this is a legitimate tranche of the population. And just by the by, you know, SNP meant to be about independence.
Yeah.
But something's got, you know, there's got to be some pretty woofy things put forward. He said that child poverty, you know, the child poverty and eliminating it in his time would be his number one, his total guiding light. It was a bit like Nicola Sturgeon's thing about ending the attainment gap, which hasn't happened. And I do wonder, because I suspect child poverty, unless he's done a calculation about the Scottish child payment, that means that just adjusting that can technically end child poverty, which I guess is possible. There's so many of those factors that are contingent upon bits of the economy that are completely controlled by Westminster that I wonder why you hug that to you. Except that it's a policy that no one in the Scottish Parliament, not even the Tories, can oppose. So if you're really going to front line, you know, I want to teach the world to sing, and I want everybody in here, unity, and I wish I could think of that word with O, that's can't remember, you know, all of that stuff, then that's not a bad place to start, because you're really going to, they're going to struggle to be opposing that.
Yeah, I mean, and the other aspect of it as well, we are coming up to a general election, and we'll speak about the English local elections later, but we are coming up to a general election, and there's nothing that so clearly puts off voters as a disunited political party, you know.
Yeah.
And I think that is a genuine focus that John Swinney has to have of not just putting the front on of a united political party, but actually seeking to unite that political party on a broad platform. You know, and we do not get the carping and undermining and outright attacks on each other that were going on over various issues. So if you can make that discipline operate, and I do go back to what Joanna Cherry said about Stephen Flynn's leadership at Westminster, where he did manage to bring a team together. He did manage to stop the backbiting, the infighting, and to present a unified face, not only at Westminster, but within the media. And I think if that lesson is learned, that will stand the SNP in good stead, because John Swinney was very clear about it in his speech, that if you believe in Scottish independence, the only way to achieve that through the ballot box, and there are other methods, as Robin McAlpin talked about community action, etc. But if you believe there is a way through the ballot box to achieve Scottish independence, the SNP is the only party in town, whether we like it or not, and we can be disappointed in as many measures as they take or do not take at domestic level. At a Westminster level, that is the only way to go forward. Because if the SNP does get a doing at the next general election, that will be the statement that independence is off the table, no matter how many people actually support it in reality in our communities.
Yeah, that's. I think everybody can totally envisage that. This is what you're saying is just making me think of a brilliant column by Neil Asherson that was in The Guardian. Maybe it was The Observer, actually, or it was The Guardian at the weekend. We'll put the link in there. But, you know, he's really calling for a sort of hardline SNP leadership on quite a number of things, even if that does provoke head-on collisions with London. But you want to do it over stuff that the public, you know, feels strongly about. So he says, for example, going ahead with legislation that's officially reserved to Westminster and daring the UK government to intervene. Or he says the second strategy, he's calling it Glaswegian defiance, would mean simply refusing to execute UK laws or orders that Holyrood thought morally wrong. An example would be refusing police protection for Home Office snatch vans, driving from England to seize asylum seekers for deportations. And he says, see previous crowd actions, Kenmure Street. Another, refusing to apply anti-trade union measures from the UK government, such as the Strike-Breaking Minimum Service Levels Act. And so he's saying, you know, these kind of things, flat-out sustained confrontation with the UK over such laws could end in sanctions against Holyrood or even the suspension of the Scottish Parliament. Maybe a provoked crisis, but one that could shift Scottish opinion irrevocably towards ending the union. However, he says, there's not the slightest sign in the SNP of the fearlessness that such illegal behaviour would require. So the wish for independence will survive, even though the vehicle to carry it sits on the hard shoulder with flat tyres. So, you know, it's still all there to discuss. And yeah, hopes and expectations are very high in John Swinney. I don't know how you know, he says he's feeling perkier, having had a year off. By gum, I'd imagine those batteries are going to go down pretty fast, you know. But anyway, we'll be here to kind of watch, you know, what happens next.
Yeah, because, I mean, it was. I did talk about the English local elections, but something that you said there leads me into what Professor John Curtis wrote about looking back at 25 years of devolution and saying the SNP were the electoral winners of devolution. And what he said, where they clearly stood in support of Scottish interests, and that goes far back as 1998, when the SNP would always do better when it was talking about standing up for Scotland and being clear on standing up for Scotland. And that's where the electoral success came from. And I think that's, again, Neil Asherson, very, very interesting article. And I'm nodding along furiously, having read it when you talked about it there. Because these are things I think with a bit of guts and determination could be done. And it does suggest to me that, as Curtis has analysed, when the SNP is seen to be clearly standing up for Scotland, that builds on the reputation that they have for standing up for Scotland and standing out to be different and standing up for Scottish interests.
Yep, absolutely. And we'll see what happens. But I mean, Meanwhile, the English local elections have jollied along, as if you couldn't have more stuff happening at the same time, basically. There was a point where, there was a rumour going round that basically Sadiq Khan might lose London, which seemed unthinkable, and so it proved.
Yeah.
It's interesting looking at the different takes on what that all means. I wish I could think who it was I was listening to, but by this stage, my brains were kind of leaking a little bit, who was pointing out that the moderate candidates were the ones that had all won. And now I do apologise to Ben Houchin for calling him Houchin. That's the trouble. You look at that word with a Scottish mind and you just see that. But anyway, Ben Houchin, who retained Tees Valley, they pointed out, as we know, he stripped away every mention of being a Conservative, but quite a moderate chap who's a lot of whose platform was, we need to get kind of assets and money out of the South and up to the North so mm-hmm. that, in a way, quite a lot about public services, needing to better them and needing to spend more on them. He was quite unequivocal about that. Another guy, Dan Swords, never heard of him before, but apparently one to watch if you want to watch Tories rise, is the guy who won Harlow Council, which again seemed to be a bit against the odds. Another one who's perceived to be a bit of a sort of, moderate Tory. Andy Street, even though he lost. And the woman who did lose was the right wing Susan Hall in London. It seems weird that people can actually vote for kind of quite reasonable, what used to be the One Nation Tory kind of idea for local purposes, and then vote in a absolute head banger, just take your pick when it comes to, the sort of national elections. So I don't know which way it's going. Apparently the Tories are just now just resigned to losing. No point in ditching in Rishi. No point really in very much. But they'll doubtless be ticking over, and we will still be watching their demise. But then you've got this point still about kind of quite how popular Keir Starmer is, and whether we really are looking at a hung parliament. I mean, the Tories have started messaging apparently about a coalition of chaos. Do you remember that old one? This will be like the greatest hits for all of us who've seen our few 21st birthdays. So this is the prospect that, oh my God, there would be, Labour be propped up by the Lib Dems and the dreaded SNP and the, a Green or something. This could be just a complete ruse, just to kind of distract. But of course, as we said earlier, if you did extrapolate some of the swings, you would think that Labour were just not quite as home and dry for a general election as they thought.
No. Well, I mean, I did take a look at it. I mean, I think Blackpool South, good grief, I'm going to actually agree with Keir Starmer here. That was a 26.3% swing to Labour directly from the Conservatives. And the Conservatives did so badly there. They only beat, I think, Reform by just over 100 votes. Now, it was a 67% swing in local councils. But that's a consistent swing in by-elections. Because Selby, it was nearly 24% swing to Labour. In Somerton and Froome, 28% swing to the Lib Dems. Now, Labour only needed 12% swing. So the swings that you've got in by-elections, even though the turnout's only 30%, in by-elections, the swing that you're getting there is a consistent one when you actually say that Labour will get a majority government. And I say you're absolutely right, because I was envisaging, Keir Starmer in the pocket of John Swinney as the next poster, as in Back to the Future on that one. But the aspect of it is as well that when you're reckoning on these local elections, 6-7% swing, the people who actually do, heaven forfend, vote on local issues. Do you know what I mean? They even vote on personality with Ben Houchin. You've got people are quite willing to vote for the Greens or Reform or independent candidates in places like Oldham, over there, which seems to be a significant, certain areas voting significantly for independent candidates because of Labour's stance on Gaza and the historical statements that not only Keir Starmer, but people like Emily Thornley and David Lammy made in the initial stages of the incursion into Gaza. So they might be willing to vote for what you genuinely believe in at a local level or on local issues or for a personality. But when it comes to the general election, will people stick with voting for the two big ones or vote tactically as well, where people will vote to keep the Tories out? So this is a horse race to fortune, Joyce, and at certain points people come and say, you got it wrong. It doesn't seem to me as if this has got any way, shape or form, any optimism contained for the Tories. And I was listening to all these eminent political commentators talking about their surprise that nobody was going to be challenging Rishi Sunak. And I thought to myself, what idiot would? You know, let them carry the can. He's yesterday's man. Let him take all the flak for the defeat that's going to take place, and you step in and take over after that. And talking about headbangers, there was Suella Braverman was on the Koonsberg show, and she was wittering on about the people's priorities, just as Douglas Ross said, which seemed to focus on being anti-immigration and stop the small boats. And yeah, so again, that the culture wars focus that there is there. But I don't know if you noticed we talked about change. I don't know if you noticed that the Rachel Reeves, the Shadow Chancellor, not only is Labour quite happy to welcome its next Health Minister and Dan Poulter into the Labour Party, but Nick Bowles, the former advisor for David Cameron and Planning Minister, introduced our friend Rachel Reeves for a speech to business leaders, just at the point when Labour seems to be rolling back on its new deal for working people to take more account of what business thinks. So that's the change that's waiting around the corner, folks. Not a lot that I can see.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it is. It is pretty grimy that way. We'll just have to wait and see. I mean, on the one hand, if it looked as if Labour had really not much to gain out of seats in Scotland because they were home and dry, that might create, more votes for the SNP or less wavering. Yeah. But I suspect, to be honest, it needs excitement. Mm-hmm. Whatever the cause of Labour is, it's a kind of negative cause. It's just they're not the Tories. An independent supporting party just can't be that, even if they are the Scottish government at the same time. There just has to be a sense of excitement about it. I remember reading that, Labour lost in Scotland all those years ago because it basically lost its change credentials. Nobody thought that anything that needed to happen was going to come out of Labour. Now, if that gets to the stage that people feel the same about the SNP, the SNP will lose, no matter what the ideas about independence. So they definitely need to, there needs to be some sort of exciting ideas, but not just exciting, hey, one I plucked from the hat, like Hamza's, council tax freeze. There needs to be some really thought through stuff here that's going to begin to solve some deep problems people know exist and sounds like it makes sense. And there needs to be talking about independence the way he did a little bit today, where it's going to be a solution to problems. That's all got to happen. But anyway, we will wait and see. The other thing, I mean, I don't think their reports on why they're not having an election at the moment have been very good. I mean, I would have just said, look, Nicola's entitled to her opinion. I just don't agree. When it comes to Nicola saying, you're always going to be able to look back to something that somebody said about needing an election in the wake of Liz Truss. But the thing about it is, just quite, practically, if there was to be an election this year, you need at least a 6-week period. I mean, at least, and you'd need a couple of weeks to get things up and running. That would take you quite neatly into the beginning of July. I don't know if anyone's noticed, but the whole blooming world goes on holiday in Scotland in July. When we were all very involved in the independence campaign, there was people were, really keen on the excitement levels were rising. But by gum, if you're going on holiday, you're going on holiday, so it's not going to it just can't happen. It's one of the reasons that, apparently today, Rishi Sunak said again, it'll definitely not be a summer election. I doubt that the Scottish electorate would smile on a party, to come back to your point about the carnaptiousness kind of problem, pushback, on a party that insisted that they needed to have their say, which would basically come at the start of July.
Yeah.
You can't do it, really. So, here we are. This is what we've got to deal with. And I hope that John Swinney's got some, you know, pretty vital stuff to kind of enliven people. And it will be very interesting to see who gets dumped basically out of the way to make way for Kate Forbes and what she eventually ends up standing for.
That was you revealing your ruthless streak there, Rick, you know, who gets dumped. Well, I thought that's not usually your diplomat. No, it's less diplomatic than normal. But just as a thing as well, just to say to before we round off, that there's talking about changes and excitement. We are now going to be available on YouTube. Thanks to the coach and his technical expertise and the exchanges that took place when it was mentioned initially by a listener, said lots of people are on YouTube. And I don't know about you, Leslie, in fact, I do know about you. My fear was, oh, God, no. I don't want folk to see me sitting here. I really don't know. No, keep that man's puss off our screens, please.
Would actually see, you know, if they could see all the flurries of wee bits of paper and slimming, you know, having to nip into a thing online and everything. But I suppose, you know, probably everybody else does the same, actually. It might not be that horribly stunning. But anyway, for the time being, we will keep our pusses out of it. but if you just are on that platform, then I guess it kind of makes sense.
Yeah, and I think it's having watched some of these, you click like and subscribe, and anytime we put it up, which will come up automatically, you will get the latest edition of the Leslie Riddick podcast. On that startling technical news, and please note, everybody, I didn't mention either Dundee United, Galway United, or Galway's men's GAA team beating Mayo in the final of the Connacht men's senior Gaelic football final. But I did. We will see you next week, Johns.